Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
It's almost not fair, the pressure this economy puts on consumers. We need you to spend, the experts say, and then things will get better. Last month, retail shoppers gave that idea a firm thumbs down. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Gather.com, where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter. People are talking about business and the economy at Gather.com.
From the studios of KPBS in San Diego, California, I'm Kai Rizdal. Great to have you with us on this Thursday. It is the 9th of July today. And there is really no other place to start than to offer a depressing commentary on the state of the consumer economy. Retailers came in this morning with generally dismal monthly sales numbers. These are the figures that chain stores report themselves, comparing June 2009 to the same month last year. Gap, down 10%. Target, down 6%. But both worse than expected. Also, Macy's down 9%, Saks down, Costco down. That is the high end and the low, big box and big price tag. There were some positive surprises, but more than a year and a half into this recession, most major retailers are still struggling. We asked Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman to find out why.
After living through more than a year of recession, you'd think retailers would have figured this out by now. Consumers are freaked out, they're spending less, saving more, and many won't buy anything unless it's a steal. In fact, we've been reporting for months that retailers are adapting, closing stores, cutting way back on inventory so they won't be stuck with piles of unsold merchandise. Analyst Sarah Johnson at IHS Global Insight says the chains have been making changes, but it's not enough.
Retailers are indeed cutting inventories, but until demand picks up, they will need to continue price discounting. Consumers won't spend unless they feel they're getting a good price.
Johnson says getting people to spend more is going to take a while.
We're still seeing very steep job cuts, and the impact of the stimulus programs is beginning, but it's not encouraging spending.
Casey Kroost is with the Retail Industry Leaders Association.
Last year, we had government stimulus spending checks that had just been released.
Those checks boosted shopping, which makes this year's numbers look even worse by comparison. Nature's not helping either, says Kroost.
We also had great weather last year, and we haven't had this year, which has been two additional challenges our retailers have had to face.
Cue the electronic violins. Economic commentary by Millie Vanilli. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
No rain here in San Diego today. Lovely as always outside. But the budget clouds are still thick and dark up in Sacramento. California lawmakers still can't agree on a budget, and the state is running out of cash. The IOUs they've been issuing up there instead of legal tender to pay their bills are about to fall out of favor. A lot of big banks that have been honoring those warrants have said they'll stop honoring them tomorrow. And that, in turn, has left taxpayers, small businesses, and local governments looking for ways to cash out. From KPCC in Los Angeles, Julie Small has more.
Printers at the California Comptroller's Office in Sacramento have been churning out billions in IOUs, and they'll keep churning them out until state lawmakers agree on a budget. Major banks decided to stop accepting IOUs to pressure lawmakers to end the bickering. Jeremy Smith sees opportunity there.
At secondmarket.com, what you will see is a pop-up that essentially says, we've now opened our marketplace for the California IOUs. Click here if you're interested in buying. Click here if you're interested in selling.
Smith's company, Second Market, trades assets that can't quickly be turned into cash. It plans to start trading California's IOUs next week, matching sellers with buyers. Smith thinks sellers will do well. Even if a buyer pays nearly full value for the IOU, they can still realize a return by the October redemption date and collect 3.75% interest that isn't subject to federal taxes.
And frankly, investors, especially, we have 3,000 investors over Second Market, and they are always looking for unique investment opportunities.
Second Market is regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission, but IOU holders have also been turning to Craigslist, eBay, and other unregulated sites. Brandon Schlichter, an Ohio entrepreneur, launched BuyMyIOU.com last week. Schlichter says his website's getting 100 hits an hour, but how will sellers know they'll actually get their money?
They don't. I haven't found a system yet. I'm trying to get some individuals on the ground in California to go out and meet these buyers.
The SEC said today it will recommend that IOU trades be regulated. Beth Mills with the California Bankers Association says IOU sellers should stick to banks if they can.
I've seen on some of the Craigslist that they're offering, you know, 50 or 65 cents on the dollar for these IOUs. So, I certainly would encourage people to go in and talk to their bank first.
Mills says banks that won't take the IOUs will still help customers find other ways to weather California's fiscal crisis. I'm Julie Small for Marketplace.
At the G8 summit in Italy today, there was some agreement between industrialized and developing economies on limiting climate change. But as we mentioned yesterday, they couldn't come to terms on specific targets for cutting carbon emissions for poorer countries. One of the many sticking points is how much aid rich countries are willing to contribute so developing nations can afford to make those cuts and so not pollute. Ecuador is one example. It's looking for $3 billion in carbon credits in return for leaving some of its Amazon oil reserves untapped. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sam Eaton reports.
Many nations now accept that preserving rainforests curbs greenhouse gas emissions, so it should be worth something. But Ecuador's proposal is the first to bring oil into the equation. More specifically, the value of leaving oil in the ground as a way to avoid emissions. And Remy Mansell with the World Resources Institute says it's an idea worth taking seriously, especially since the Yasuni National Park, where the drilling would take place, is one of the most biodiverse regions in the world.
The easy path for Ecuador to take is to drill the oil, but they're proposing a bold concept, which is leave the oil where it is and take account of the value of the park and try to protect the environment and making it economically viable.
To be economically viable, the value of the emissions credits sold on the global market would need to offset the potential profits of extracting the oil. A tough sell when you consider the region holds about 20% of Ecuador's untapped oil reserves, in a country where oil is the main source of revenue. But an even tougher sell will be getting the international carbon markets on board. Ecuador recently defaulted on more than $3 billion in bonds. And then there's the question of whether untapped oil has any impact on global emissions. Mark Trexler is the head of climate markets at the risk management firm DNV.
Whether that oil is left in the ground or not doesn't really have any effect on how much oil we use around the world. People will simply get that oil from someplace else.
Meaning the avoided emissions would effectively be zero. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, choppy, undecided, pick your adjective. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Here now, the quote of the day, courtesy of Warren Buffett on Good Morning America this morning. Talking about the prospects for a second economic stimulus plan, the legendary investor said, and here I quote, "Our first stimulus bill was sort of like taking half a tablet of Viagra and also having a bunch of candy mixed in." More than you wanted to imagine about the economy, perhaps. But a lot of people, many of them in Congress, are opposed to the idea of more stimulus. Commentator and economist Justin Wolfers says the naysayers couldn't be more wrong.
You'll hear plenty of arguments against another round of fiscal stimulus, but they're all wrong. First, some say we should let the current stimulus run its course. But if a pretty bad economy called for a pretty big stimulus, then a really bad economy calls for a really big stimulus, and we now have a really bad economy. Even if the first stimulus package works exactly as planned, unemployment will probably rise above 10%. If we knew in January what we know now, we would have done more. And we still can. Second, some forecasters argue that we are close to the turning point. I'm not convinced. But even if these sunny projections are right, they still suggest the economy will underperform for another 3 or 4 years. Fiscal policy can help close that gap. Third, some argue that the original stimulus didn't work, and so we shouldn't try more. But it's way too early to tell. And we don't know how much worse things would have been without the stimulus. A disappointing couple of months can't overturn decades of evidence that government spending stimulates the economy. Fourth, there are very real concerns about the deficit. But a well-designed stimulus means more government investment today and less tomorrow. It may even be cheaper for government to invest today when the economy has some slack and wages are low. Our biggest economic risk isn't the deficit, but the risk of doing too little to kickstart the economy. There remains the risk of deflation, which could further stall economic growth. There's also the possibility that if unemployment remains high enough for long enough, it may become institutionalized. If a generation comes to think of unemployment insurance as an alternative to work, or if they lose skills, hope, or connections, unemployment could remain high for a generation. Sound familiar? Europe spent the past 30 years recovering from just this outcome. The United States can't afford that risk. The best argument for another fiscal stimulus is that doing too little may be far worse than doing too much.
Justin Wolfers teaches business and public policy at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Take a second to send us your thoughts. Our website is marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact. Wall Street traders and hotshot deal makers used to be the cool kids on the financial block. Their accountants, well, they were the kids getting their milk money stolen. But the financial crisis and the recession it helped bring on has changed that perception a bit. Accountants are the ones doing a lot of the heavy lifting right now, sorting through all those pesky balance sheets, figuring out ways to keep big banks solvent. Randy Beatty is not at all displeased by that shifting attitude. He's the dean of the Leventhal School of Accounting at USC, just down the road from our studios. Randy, thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Guy.
What's it like at USC these days to be an accounting major?
Well, it's pretty amazing. We have an enormous number of students who have become interested in accounting over the last few years. Part of that is a response to the Enron crisis that occurred.
Let's remind people what that was. That was all the off-balance sheet accounting and all those problems that those guys had keeping their books straight.
It was a period over which there were a number of very highly publicized accounting scandals. And so this became very well understood on campus that accounting turns out to be very important. For many years, we were viewed as not providing much of a benefit.
Is it a stretch to say that accounting is sexy now?
I actually don't think it's a stretch. To be really honest, I never thought we weren't sexy. But certainly we've gone through periods where we've been viewed as more important and periods in which we've been viewed as really a necessary evil.
There are all kinds of pejoratives that come with descriptions of accountants. Guys with green eye shades, bean counter is another one. I imagine you probably hate that phrase.
Well, I'm not particularly fond of it. As you can appreciate, most of the people that I know that are in public accounting are very bright people. They're very capable. They're involved in the arts. They're thoughtful. They're some of the most fun people that I know.
So with all the attention on the financial world and business generally at large here in this economy, when you go to like a dinner party, are you pretty much the center of attention?
Well, I rather think it's because of my great personality, but it is interesting. We do talk a lot about how things are going to resolve themselves over time. And so questions about the financial structure of some of the banking institutions, how regulation is being modified by some of the transactions that the government has become involved in. Accountants are right in the middle of this because of the nature of how those numbers are generated. And so I have become, from time to time, the expert on financial accounting. And although I must admit, when people ask me about the tax code, that I'm far less prepared to answer those questions.
It's funny. You and me both on the tax code. I don't know. Randy Beatty is professor and dean at the Leventhal School of Accounting at the University of Southern California, right down the road. Randy, thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you very much, Kai. It's been a lot of fun.
Coming up, Michigan motors into the alternative energy market.
Those people know what we have to accomplish from a manufacturing standpoint. They're manufacturing people.
But first, let's do the numbers. All right, let's just say the stock market lacked conviction again today. The Dow Industrials tacked on just 4 points, closed almost flat at 8,183. The Nasdaq's five-point rise amounted to a one-third of 1% for a finish at 1752. The S&P 500 notched up 3%, rather 3 points, a third of 1%, wrapped up at 1882. Pharmaceuticals were the downer for the Dow. Merck shares fell more than 3.5% amid reports of a disappointing clinical trial for a new cholesterol drug. Stock in Pfizer also declined by more than 2%. Stock in both J.P. Morgan Chase and Citigroup bounced more than 2.5% higher. Bank of America shares advanced around 1%. Ford says its sales in China are on track to outpace its rivals. The automaker's shares accelerated by more than 5% today. Bonds sagged. That brought the yield on the 10-year T-note up to 3.41. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. Keep an eye on Marketplace wherever you go. iPhone users can listen to business news and updates on the fallout from the financial crisis. Watch the Marketplace whiteboards and follow the Scratchpad blog. Just visit marketplace.org on your iPhone.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on international trade for May. The G8 summit wraps up in Italy. President Obama is scheduled to meet with Pope Benedict in Rome before departing the country. And vintage race cars from all over the U.S. hit the track in Portland, Oregon for the annual Portland Historic Races. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The monster success of the new Transformer movie aside, these still are not great times for most of the movie business. The threat of an actor strike shut down some productions earlier this year, at least for a while. There's the recession keeping people home instead of having a night out. And recently, the state of Massachusetts added to the bad news. Marketplace's Rico Galliano reports.
Massachusetts has been buzzing about a recent report from their Department of Revenue. The report says the state didn't actually earn money from the film productions that shot there last year. In fact, thanks to tax credits which Massachusetts gives to movie productions, it lost quite a bit. Steve D'Amico is a state representative.
The report basically says that our net loss was $95.5 million.
This in the midst of a budget crisis. And D'Amico says Massachusetts hasn't gained $95.5 million worth of local film industry jobs. He thinks the 43 states which offer tax credits to filmmakers should get out of the movie wooing business.
This is a massive waste of money. The problem is that this is a 43-state competition. There are 43 states. They go from state to state peddling this stuff, bidding states off against each other. So this is a race to the bottom we simply can't win.
Another state in that competition? California, where a nonprofit called Film LA wants its state government to offer more credits and incentives to film productions. Paul Audley's the president. He says despite the report, Massachusetts has reaped some benefits from film production.
$77 million in wages were paid to Massachusetts people, and well over that, $343 million in GDP increases in Massachusetts over the same period.
Even so, Massachusetts Representative D'Amico will offer a bill later this year to roll back the tax credits. Some senators in Pennsylvania hope to do the same thing with their state's credits, too. In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
There's a big news story out of the UK today that would ordinarily be splashed all over the front pages of the dailies owned by Britain's biggest newspaper owner. Unfortunately for Rupert Murdoch, though, the story is about one of his papers. Murdoch's News of the World has been caught up in a whirl of celebrity, scandal, and wiretapping, and then paying to cover it up. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is on the line from London. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Kai.
What are the allegations against Mr. Murdoch, and from whence do they come?
They come from a rival newspaper, The Guardian. The starting point for all this was an actual court case in 2007 when two people employed by the Murdoch paper, The News of the World, were jailed for phone tapping. Now, at the time, the line from the Murdoch Empire was, this is an isolated event, it's a one-off, a rogue reporter on the rampage. Now, however, The Guardian claims this practice was endemic. The News of the World, as a matter of routine, were hiring private detectives to hack into the cell phones of public figures in search of juicy material.
And quite a few of those figures as well, celebrities, politicians, pretty much everyone.
That's right. And the scale of this alleged abuse is pretty extraordinary. We're talking here between 2,000 and 3,000 people, according to The Guardian. People like the actress Gwyneth Paltrow, even cabinet ministers, including the deputy prime minister at the time, John Prescott, if true, a pretty risky move by the News of the World.
As with all good scandals, Stephen, there is an allegation of a cover-up, yes?
That's right. And The Guardian says the Murdoch empire tried to cover this scandal up, paying about $1.6 million to a couple of the victims of the alleged phone tapping. These were out-of-court settlements with a confidentiality clause designed, says The Guardian, to keep the whole affair under wraps.
It does seem too delicious. If Murdoch were covering this, one of his papers, we'd never be hearing the end of it.
Absolutely. This is not, I should say, being reported extensively in the Murdoch papers.
Yeah, needless to say. The police, though, Stephen, have said they're satisfied nothing else has happened, but now the Crown prosecutors are looking into this?
That's right, and they're not the only ones. A parliamentary committee is opening its own hearings into this affair next week. As you say, the Crown Prosecution Service says they're going to take another look at the case. The role of the police is one of the controversial aspects of this affair. The suggestions are they may have been lent on by this powerful media company to slow down and stop their investigations. So we're certainly going to hear a great deal more about this. There are still many questions to be answered.
Speaking of hearing, have we heard from Mr. Murdoch himself, the CEO of News Corp?
Yes, he was asked about this affair. He denied any knowledge of it and dismissed the claim that his company had tried to hush up the scandal. Mr. Murdoch said, if one of my companies had paid out $1.6 million, I would be aware of it. Let me tell you, they have not.
Stephen Beard in London for us. Thank you, Stephen.
Okay, Kai.
In case you skipped over the fine print in the General Motors bankruptcy ruling that was handed down over the weekend, as of noon today, New York time, GM was effectively out of Chapter 11. The company has been cleared to sell off the best bits of itself to a new GM. CEO Fritz Henderson is supposed to make the announcement official that that's been done tomorrow morning. The collapse of the American auto industry has left the state of Michigan with the highest unemployment rate in the country. Thousands of companies that supply or used to supply parts to the big three have been squeezed as their main customers have cut back. But some of those suppliers are finding greener ways to stay alive, as Dustin Dwyer from Michigan Radio reports.
Mike Hess is running late.
How's it going, sir? Excellent. Good to hear.
He's at the rental car counter at the airport in Grand Rapids, Michigan. His flight from Reno was delayed more than an hour, and now he needs to drive 2 hours for a meeting. Hess is the head of a company called Mariah Power. It builds low-cost residential wind turbines. The company's headquartered in Reno, but the turbines are built in Manistee, Michigan, 100 miles north of here, by a company called Mastech Manufacturing. Given all the hassles of traveling, it's an easy question. Why not just build the turbines in Reno? Hess says because workers at Mastech can do the job better.
Those people know what we have to accomplish from a manufacturing standpoint. They're manufacturing people.
And more important, Hess says, they can do the job cheaper.
We made parts by hand, one at a time, in Reno, Nevada. It cost us $9,000. We now make that same machine for $2,500 in Manistee, Michigan.
To understand what's so different about manufacturing in Michigan versus a place like Reno, it helps to meet John Holcomb. He's the manager of Mastech's plant in Manistee. He leads me on a quick tour of the shop floor, where about 40 workers used to build the machines that build cars. Mastech switched to turbines late last year, right as GM and Chrysler started looking for government loans to stay solvent. Holcomb stops at one station, where a worker mills a small metal plate. Holcomb says parts like this are typically made on a lathe, a machine that spins the part so it can be cut into a circle. Holcomb says with milling, where the tool spins instead of the part, he's able to make more parts in the same amount of time.
And we're doing it with some special fixtures and special tools. So it's the mindset that makes the difference.
That difference means a part that used to cost $11 now costs about $250 to make. Plenty of other companies in Michigan's auto industry are trying to make this transition. The state of Michigan is offering incentives, But the green energy sector may not be a cure-all for Michigan's economy. Eric Merkel is an independent auto industry analyst.
You just are not going to be able to create those new industries fast enough to offset the loss that's going to occur on the automotive side.
The auto industry has already shed hundreds of thousands of jobs. The production of wind turbines, solar panels, and other alternative energy equipment is expected to create only about 30,000 jobs in Michigan, according to a study by the Renewable Energy Policy Project. And even green energy jobs aren't immune to the recession. Jeff Metz heads Doubting Industries, about 200 miles from Manistee. It's another former auto supplier that's gotten into the wind business. But Metz says orders for turbine parts dried up when the economy tanked. He's had to lay off about half of his 260 workers. Metz expects business to pick up, but he says he'll need more capital to start new product lines. Meanwhile, he's being offered incentives to move overseas.
Now we've got other countries calling us saying, do it over here. Yeah, I mean, China's... come here and do it. We'll give you the funding to do it. Well, we want to do it in the U.S.
Metz and his business partner, Roger Cope, have heard about new green energy subsidies and incentives from the U.S. government. But Cope says so far it's just a lot of talk.
Find a way to facilitate this. If you've got all this money, you know, Congress has allocated all these funds and they make these great speeches and everything, and nothing happens.
Auto industry analysts like Eric Merkel say one of the downsides of alternative energy for businesses has always been its dependence on government support. But it's possible that the manufacturing expertise in Michigan may be exactly what's needed to drive costs down and make wind turbines and solar panels cost competitive. The challenge is putting that expertise to use before it's crushed under the weight of a collapsing auto industry. In Grand Rapids, Michigan, I'm Dustin Dwyer for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, helping to solve tomorrow's retirement savings challenge today. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note today, one last word about Warren Buffett. We told you a week or so ago that bids for the annual charity auction that he runs, a lunch date for you and some of your friends with the Oracle of Omaha. Well, we told you those bids were running well below normal, a mere $500,000 or so, and last year's winner paid better than $2 million. Never fear, though, the Canadians have stepped up. A Toronto-based investment firm won the prize with a bid of nearly $1.7 million this year. That's American dollars. So, I don't know, maybe capitalism's not dead after all. Anyway, that is Marketplace from American Public Media this Thursday afternoon. Today, the Dow gained 4 points. We'll call that basically flat percentage-wise. The Nasdaq rose 5 points, almost a third of 1%. The S&P 500 added 3 points, more than a third of 1% there. John Buckley, Stephen Gregory, John Haas, Patty Hirsch, Phyllis Owens, Betsy Streisand, and Lisa Tucker are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is George Judson. Thanks also today to the staff here at KPBS in San Diego. Coming up next time on the broadcast, back home in Los Angeles, trading handmade guns in Ghana.
People want to get rich overnight. They don't want to work. So they feel that is the easiest way of making money.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.